welcome everybody to Beer, Bourbon, and Balderdash.
Balderdash.
This is episode 18 is the one that we're doing the intro to right now. So we had Elkins Brewing Blonde as the beer and Rough Rider High Rye. And then we talked about tribalism. So we started doing topics by this point.
Yeah. And I remember this episode too. Like, the Elkins Brewing Company is the weird one out in the middle of the New Mexico desert.
Yep.
It's connected to a laundromat.
Wow. That was a great memory, man.
Well, I loved that moment. And that was part of Helen and I's road trip. So yeah. It was like not long after the road trip that we did that episode. So, that brewery specifically holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Because it's so obscure.
It's also why we talk about road trips a lot, because we like road tripping. Mm-hmm. So we do talk about road trips a lot. I've noticed in our little sheet. And the only reason why I know any of these things about these episodes is that you created that Google Drive sheet that we don't keep up at all. No, we don't. Like, we did really well. And then we just stopped.
I had about 10 episodes where I like pre-planned the beers and like,
I know.
And then I just forgot.
And then you went to Boston and you got busy is actually what happened, which is fine.
I created that sheet after I was here.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you did the typical man thing where we start things and we just don't finish them.
I pushed really hard for a very short time and just couldn't get across the finish line.
So one thing I noticed about this episode is that our sound got better. I got a lot of great feedback and people started saying, hey, you know, you should look at like noise gates and stuff like that to kind of weed out a lot of the background noise. And I did. I also got the Zoom PodTrack P4. So I got that little gray device that we were using for podcasting, and we ditched the Scarlett. Which, by the way, I still have the Scarlett 4, and I still have this Zoom PodTrack if anyone's interested in buying it, because I have the Rodecaster Pro 2 now, and it does a great job. But this little thing was a great little portable, recorder for podcasting. I wasn't mad about it. It just took batteries, so I had to keep fresh batteries with me in case you and I got really long winded.
Yeah, which happens.
Yeah, this
especially
one, though,
early on, there was some that were really long.
Yeah. And this one was a great conversation, I thought, because we really kind of got into tribalism in the Christian church, tribalism in our culture, which still happens. And this was, episode 18, so this is 2022. Is that right? 2022, 2023? How long have we been doing this?
I thought we started
December 21.
2022 was when we did our road trip. So, yeah, it would have been December 21.
Yeah. So this is 2022, and we could still talk about this, and it would be a current event.
Mm-hmm.
There's still massive tribalism in America, and it tears us apart. It really does.
It does.
So.
It really does. I came across a really good Jordan Klepper clip today. Mm. He did a TED Talk, and he talks kind of about this. And one of the things he's listed three things to kind of get over the tribalism. And I wish I could remember all three of them. The first one was read a book. Mm-hmm. It's simple. I can't remember the second one. Or the third one was something like be wrong or admit that you're wrong.
Yep.
Or be open to being wrong.
Yes. I don't know is a powerful statement.
Yeah.
You don't have to know everything.
What he keeps reiterating, he's like, you are not as smart as you think you are.
Yeah.
So go learn from other people.
Hence, read the book.
Inside someone else said, yeah, read a book. Because you're not as smart as you think you are.
Yeah. No, that's good advice for anybody, honestly. I agree with you.
Yeah, and it's like his point is that like we'll open you up to other opinions. Oh, no, the second one was travel. Because it's hard to be closed-minded when you travel to places that are uncomfortable or new or different and meet different people. And then, be open to being wrong. It's like those three things that like just kind of opens you up to the world and you're willing to have these conversations like we try to have.
Yep. Yep. We should talk about more of that on some future episode.
Yeah, maybe
we could take those points and talk about how we're defeating our tribalism.
Yeah, maybe we could get Jordan Klepper on.
I mean, yes, as we move into our new form, not our final form, but our new form of Beer, Bourbon, Balderdash, maybe we'll add that. You know, I think we're going to say a lot of that. We're just going to keep the same thing over and over again. And having said that, please enjoy episode 18. Rough Riding Blondes. Cheers.
Such a great name.
Isn't it, though?
Cheers.
Wait for you to say the F word.
No, I'm clean today.
Clean today. Enjoy.
You're still recording?
Yeah.
Let's make sure that there's no interruption. Oh yeah, I think we're good.
Welcome everybody to Beer, Bourbon, and Balderdash.
Balderdash.
How you doing today, Johnny?
Well, you know.
I do?
No, you don't.
I don't know.
I'm good. It's always good to, you know, think about your hairy belly.
Yeah.
You showed it to me earlier, so it's like the only thing imprinted in my brain
is my hairy belly.
I don't actually know why you had your shirt up.
That is just, I sometimes just do that. I just lift my shirt up and walk around with just my hairy belly hanging out.
That's weird.
No, it's comforting.
I did. I feel like we're kind of on the same page today because when Nate walked into the garage, when I was looking for shims or something, he's like, what are you doing? And I had my shirt up. And I was scratching my belly button. Yeah. So
it's comforting. I'm not ashamed of my belly.
I had an itch.
Oh.
So there was like an actual functional reason.
I had an itch too to take off my shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And show my French belly.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're back here on the podcast doing it up again.
Doing it up again. That's not even a song.
Oh, no, I know. We just made it up. That was fantastic.
That's our lead-in.
Nope. Doing it up again. Bam, bam, bam. Beer, bourbon, and Balderdash. We are sorry.
Welcome.
Well, Johnny, we got some great beer ahead of us.
We do.
Some whiskey. It is National Bourbon Day. This is June 14th as we record this.
Why is Flag Day and Bourbon Day the same day?
I have no idea. That nothing on any website told me that. It's also National Cupcake Day. So what we do is we cram all the things in days.
Why does everything have a day?
Because equality, equity. That's why everyone gets a trophy.
I guess.
You know, when I was growing up, I didn't get a trophy if I didn't perform well.
Well, that's...
And I was okay with it. And all it made me want to do is next year get that freaking trophy and be better.
Yeah, like... I think most sports, I didn't get a trophy, but in swimming, you would get a, when you were little, like 8 and under, which is a division, you'd get a purple ribbon for showing up, which is like, I know all of those ones that I have in my book are just dumb. They're like, oh, that's the race I lost.
I mean, I don't mind the ribbon thing and then give the ones that really did well and put in the effort of actual trophy because it, to me, it didn't make me feel less in. It just made me want to work harder to get to that level to get that trophy.
Well, the purple ribbon was pointless. I mean, I guess you could see it the other way. It's like, well, it's a reminder you competed in this meet, maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Those purple ones just seem useless.
Yep.
But all of those red ones.
Well, in Little League, we would, when I was younger in Little League playing baseball, if you got a trophy at the end of the year, if it was like something that you did that really excelled. So like if you're great at stealing bases, like most stolen bases, and the coaches would keep track of that. As we got older, we would keep track of our own batting averages and pitchers would keep score their own ERAs and stuff like that. And so we knew if it was BS or not. Mm-hmm. So,
would that be league wide that they would give that?
No, the coaches, just on your team. Yeah. And well, the leagues did have trophies for those players that really, really did well, but that was at the higher level ages that were kind of like almost high school, same high school ages. So if you weren't playing ball and for your local high school, let's say high school was garbage as far as baseball at that time. So if you wanted to play like seniors, they called it the senior league. And there was like high school age, little league, then, yeah, you would, like, have better stats. And then, of course, you can go to tournament of champions and state tournaments and all that kind of stuff.
Do you think Scotty still remembers his ERA, or not his ERA, his batting average?
I don't know. He might.
When he was in high school. You know, he might. The glory days. Because he played baseball pretty seriously.
Yeah. Well, he played So not only did he play for high school, he played all the RBI teams. And so they travel across the country and play in all the stadiums as well, baseball stadiums as well. So he, yeah, he was really into it. And then he had a coach in high school that blew out his arm because he didn't listen. The coach didn't listen to Scott tell him that his arm was starting to ache. Because Scott was a left-handed pitcher who was fabulous, fantastic. Slider, curveball broke real hard.
Didn't give him the break.
No, and if his arm started getting tired and stuff, the coach would just keep him in. And, you know, he didn't want to do that. Now he's got shoulder problems.
Well, it stinks. Does it still bug him today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure does.
Maybe that's why he's such a bad shot.
He's not, actually. But I was trying to get, so like the same guy that I watch, knees over toes guy, to help my knees get better and stronger. He has shoulder exercises too. And I was trying to get Scott to do that to like, yes, your shoulder hurts, but these exercises help build the muscles up around it. So it hurts less and you can have more use out of it. But I don't know if he went to the doctor. He probably didn't go to the doctor about it or anything like that. Cause he's probably like, whatever, old age, blah, blah, blah.
It's fine. I'll just hurt.
I mean,
you don't have to hurt.
You don't have to. Yeah. And the last thing I want to do is I don't want to shuffle. Like, it's funny the things that you might find scary as you get older. Like to me, being alone sounds kind of scary as an older person. Like if I was in my 70s and 80s alone, estranged from my children, no wife, that wouldn't be great.
Oh, that's no life at all.
Yeah. And the inability to actually walk normally. Instead, you're shuffling because you can't lift a leg. Sounds terrible to me.
Yeah, and also...
And hunched over.
Would make owning shoes very expensive. Yeah, it would. Just have to keep buying them. I only buy Doc Martens.
Yeah, exactly.
They have 4-inch heels.
Wooden soles, basically. That's why I can't lift them. Dutch clogs.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'll just be barefoot.
Well, growing up, we used to have little wooden Dutch clogs that we'd put out, and whatever magical man during Christmas would come and fill it with something.
Krampus?
Krampus, sure. Krampus is Dutch, I guess, right? I don't know.
I don't know.
Whoever.
It's a terrible movie. I know that.
I haven't seen it.
I saw about 12 minutes of it and then turned it off.
Wasn't there Silent Night, Deadly Night, or something like that? When I was growing up, there was a Christmas horror movie called Silent Night, Deadly Night. And the cover of the VHS, I think I only saw a little bit of it, but the cover of the VHS is like a chimney with like Santa's arm and like an axe in it or something like that. So Santa comes down and kills you if you're naughty, basically, is the premise of that. Oh,
that would be great population control.
Oh, okay, Bill Gates. Hey, since this is beer, bourbon, and balderdash, let's start with the beer.
All right. Since we're just getting to this, and I feel bad that it's been so long, but we are just getting to this. Okay. What I brought for us today came from the road trip.
Yeah.
This beer specifically. So short backstory. When Helen and I go places, we regularly just like look up wineries and breweries in the middle of nowhere and go there without knowing anything about them because it's fun to do.
That's fun.
And so this was one that without telling me, Helen just got on her phone and was like, oh, there's a brewery here. Do you want to go? I'm like, okay, let's do that. Turns out this brewery is in a tiny town called Grant, New Mexico, right off the interstate, and happens to be connected to an RV park.
Oh.
So it's like almost high desert, and it says Elkins Brewing and RV park on the sign.
Does it really?
It's like one building, and like out behind the building is the showers and laundry facilities.
I love that.
It's just a small two barrel system. But we decided to stop in there and we're like, oh my gosh, this is good. It's funny too that their road sign just says brewery. It's just a giant sign in the RV park. And it's right off the interstate. So we stopped in there. We're like, it could be terrible because we've had those before. There's one on Highway 2 up north of us that's kind of that way. It's like you go around behind the restaurant and into somebody's shed, and they offered us chili out of a crock pot they just made that day. That was weird. Not Elkins Brewing. This place is legit and good, and they've been around a little while.
It definitely has Freon in it.
Yes, all Freon.
Yeah. Some antifreeze, too.
Yep. But it was a cool stop at the... I think it's about an hour... maybe 45 minutes east of Albuquerque.
Okay.
And just a small brewery with great beer. So we have cans, but they can when you order it. So they don't have a canning production line. It's really small. They just have one of those machines where they pour it, top it. So that's why I feel bad that we waited a while because these cans don't usually keep their carbonation and their flavor for a long time. So
it sparkled when it came out.
Yes. So this beer is called, I also picked this partly because of the whiskey we're going to taste, but also because of your introducing us to Yellowstone.
Nice.
This is Buckle Bunny Blonde.
Buckle Bunnies.
Yeah. They also have one that refers to a whore. So I almost brought that one, but I thought this was better.
Do you think the Buckle Bunnies in real life are that gorgeous?
Some of them, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Did you know I wanted to be a rodeo clown for a while?
Do they have daddy issues?
I mean, a bullfighter. They call them bullfighters.
Yeah, you're a rodeo clown.
There's professional Horses. Bullfighting schools you can go to.
Really?
Yeah.
So why'd you want to be a rodeo clown?
Because I didn't want to get on a bull.
Oh.
But I didn't mind one chasing me around.
That's weird.
I know. It's dumb.
I mean, they're both bad.
I know. It's just, I don't know. It seemed like something that sounded like fun. I don't know.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Do rodeo clowns get buckle bunnies?
They get the leftovers.
You get buckle vultures.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Well, here, man. Cheers.
Cheers.
The buckle bunnies everywhere. That's pretty tasty.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
Ooh, it's got a funky aftertaste.
It does. So,
what kind of beer is it?
Well, it's labeled as a blonde.
It does not taste like a blonde.
No, it almost tastes like a Belgian.
Yep.
Not a sour. It's not quite a sour. Almost like Orval. Mm-hmm. But it's got that Brettanomyces sort of flavor to it.
Yep.
And I apologize. I'll have to look this up. I don't remember if that was on purpose or not, but they did have some really interesting beers. So I feel like it's intentional, like what you're tasting.
Their interpretation of a
it's blonde. It was like they call it a blonde because it's that color and it's sort of a blonde, but they would have done something different to it. They had some really interesting beers, and their beers were generally pretty good.
You can't say, I mean, it's Buckle Bunny Blonde. I mean,
that's, yeah, it's a good name. But if you're ever in New Mexico in the middle of nowhere, it's worth a stop.
Yep. 1901 East Santa Fe Avenue, Grants, New Mexico, 87020.
There you go.
Well, cool. I didn't tell you what the alcohol by volume is, though.
No, because it's all handwritten. So one of the ones we ordered that we took home was like 13%. I think I want to say this one's like 5 to 6. It's an easy drinking beer.
I like their logo, too, because it's a dream catcher. In the shape of like wheat stalks and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Cool.
I think it is on reservation land.
Okay.
In New Mexico.
Yeah, it's not terrible at all. It's actually pretty refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting when you said blonde, I want to know what it was, but when you said blonde, it didn't taste like what I would consider a blonde.
No. Well, I think people confuse like a blonde with like a light lager. So like you hear blonde and you're like, oh, it's going to be like light and crisp and kind of boring, maybe like a bud.
Summer. But, no, I know it's not that.
But they'll tend to have a little more weed in them. They'll be a little fuller body, almost like a cream ale. But this is really good. It's
the second taste tastes like the can.
Like you're tasting the can?
Yeah.
It has a
little tinny taste.
A little metallic in there. Mm-hmm. So I apologize, Elkins. I know your beers were good. Worth the stop. We just, because
this is a bad.
All the things that happened made it harder to pull this one out. And
it's light and crisp. The carbonation is not really heavy. And that's probably just because we didn't drink it soon enough.
Yeah.
But I kind of like not carbonated beer because mm-hmm. it makes it easier to drink.
The carbonation adds like a,
the color's a cloudy, tang,
sort like of
a golden cloudy color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Forced carbonation will add like a bite to the beer, and so the less carbonation, the less that bite, and it doesn't detract from the flavors of the beer. That carbonation bite, I think, detracts from what the beer actually could be, and you're not getting the full flavor, but it does add mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And some people really don't like flat beers, like traditional English beers that are cask conditioned. So
And I think in our minds we consider them flat, not realizing that they're not necessarily like flat in the sense that it's gone bad.
Yeah.
And because in America it's all carbonated.
Yeah.
And unfortunately I'm smelling a little of the charcoal and bratwurst on my hands from just barbecuing just now, so
I want to smell your hands
here. Hold on, let me, right underneath your nose there. You're welcome.
Wait, it's smells like poop.
No, I like it. This is good. I like this. Nice and refreshing.
It was one of the oddest stops that I think we've made at a brewery. And we didn't expect it. So we made the decision based on how close it was to the interstate.
Yeah.
The other one that we were looking at was in the bigger town that was farther up, but it was like 2 miles off the interstate. And the pictures made it look like it was a giant brewery. Whereas this was the exact opposite. It's like in the middle of nowhere next to an RV park. It was small and almost one of those places you walk in and like, I'm sure they're used to travelers coming through, but they still look at you like, what are you doing here? And what do you want?
So when you say RV park, is this like KOA campground type RV park or people live in a double wide?
No, it's like, yeah, like a KOA.
Okay.
But like a long-term KOA, okay. Like people live there.
Gotcha.
A lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right term.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Like they do rent out spaces and RVs come through, but there's clearly some people live there who semi-permanently.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was a great place. I think her name is Jessie, was our bartender, and she was awesome. It was funny. It was like, you almost feel, I don't want to say unwelcome.
Right.
But it's like, you get this confused look, like, I've never seen you before. What are you doing here? But then once she started opening up, she was fantastic. Just great conversations. And, you know, she was learning about the beer. She moved to that small town on purpose. She was actually from Albuquerque and okay. She wanted to live in a small town. Yeah. She kind of moved out there and decided she loved it. So she stayed. The guy who owns the brewery, he wasn't there, but she said he just loves making beer. It's a little 2-barrel system. So for anybody who doesn't know, brewing systems are, they're sized by barrel, and a barrel is 2 kegs. So if you say a 2-barrel system, that system makes 4 kegs, 4 Sankey kegs at a time. They're half barrel kegs. The kegs that you used to seeing, the big ones.
Sure.
So anyway, it was a cool place. It was a great stop, beautiful little brewery. And
how many different offerings did they have of their beer?
A lot. They had a lot of taps.
Oh, really?
A surprising number of taps. Oh,
for like such a small operation.
Yeah, like you pull up on this place, and I'm not kidding, like the footprint of the tasting room had to only be like 200 or 300 square feet. It was small.
Oh, yeah.
But they had probably a dozen different beers on tap.
Yeah.
And it's all small batch, and I'm sure he gets enough locals that come through there that he goes through them pretty quick. And
that's cool.
Yeah. There was a family there eating, and the guy was talking on the phone and smiling, laughing, and said hello. And it just, like, you could see it as a place that locals would want to hang out.
Sure.
Because I would go there all the time.
There's not many locals, so it's kind of small enough.
There's a little town across the interstate. There's like the RV park, and then there's Grant is right across the interstate, but still pretty small.
Yeah.
But it's one of those areas where everything's far apart. So if that's like the only brewery within 50 miles, that's where people will go.
Did you find that a lot in the Southwest, that they're not as dense? Mm-hmm. As, 'cause you went from the East Coast to the Southwest and then up to the back home here in the West Coast. So it's not as dense. It's much more spread, probably more spread out than it is here in Seattle. I imagine.
Yeah. You drive through the high desert, especially in New Mexico, like everything's really far apart. Like those are the areas, even driving through Nevada, when we drove from Vegas to Reno, that's about an 8-hour drive. And there were multiple times where it's like next fuel, 140 miles. So you have to make sure that you like,
gas up.
Otherwise you're fucked.
You picked a good time to go on that road trip. 'Cause right now it'd be an expensive road trip.
Oh, it was still expensive.
I paid $5.40 a gallon today in Covington.
I paid more than that when we got gas in California.
Oh, I believe that. That we're was at the $8. Highest.
Yeah. Man. Some places. Yeah. Even here in West Seattle, it's $6.
That's madness.
I drove past it yesterday. $6 a gallon.
Just in the last 3 weeks, Covington went from $5.04 to $5.40. Well, when we filled up at Desert Air, I mean, that was over $100.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Elon Musk is buying up fuel so that he sells more Teslas?
No, I don't. I do not.
Is it Bill Gates then?
It's obviously Putin.
Putin.
I mean, we voted for Putin, didn't we?
We kind of did.
Because it's all his fault that everything is is going the way that it's going.
It's not all his fault.
I don't know. I heard the president yesterday, and he said Putin's taxes are doing this to us.
Putin's not helping, but greedy-ass oil companies, I think they just saw an opportunity to jack up their prices and make a lot of money, and that's what they're doing, as they always do, because they don't give a fuck about you and me.
No, no one gives a fuck about you and me. You know that, right?
I give a fuck about you.
Well, that's we have to have each other.
And I am someone.
Yes, but we have to have each other. So you can't trust governments or corporations to give a fuck about you.
That's true.
Ever. Huh? They don't. They're for themselves.
I don't know. Amazon gives me that discount on my Prime card. And free shipping.
Yeah. And a Jeff B. Escalation. So what do we got for bourbon tonight on National Bourbon Night?
Oh, my God. We're not going to do a morning radio show.
Yeah, we are.
Nope.
Did you know in 1964 is when the bourbon became the distinct spirit of the United States? Congress made it the distinct spirit of the United States.
Bourbon is?
Yep.
Did you know in 2022, I learned that bourbon became the distinct alcohol of the U.S. in 1964.
Wild.
Crazy, right?
Crazy.
All right. So, Long Island's Finest. This is one I've not actually
Long
tasted.
Long Island?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is there a distillery on Long Island?
According to this, there is.
Ooh.
This is Rough Rider Straight Bourbon Whiskey.
Okay.
This is actually not an inexpensive bottle.
Oh. But is it good? You've had it.
I've never tasted it.
Broke the seal.
I know. I in the car.
Oh.
Just a little nip.
Okay. No. Was it good?
Yeah, well, I was driving past the Taco Time after I dropped Tate off. Like, gosh, I need a drink. No, I actually didn't taste it. I just wanted to prep it.
Oh, okay.
So that you didn't get an anticipation waiting for the bourbon.
Anticipation. Get a kink in my butt.
Finished it. A kink in my butt. Too funny. Take a chill. Finished in brandy casks, Long Island Spirits Distillery, okay. Baiting Hollow, New York. Non-chilled filtered. High rye bourbon.
Ooh, I like rye. Yay, rye.
So hand numbered.
Okay.
Batch number 49.
Nice.
So there's quite a few. So it's not been a lot of distilleries out there on Long Island. So there's a handful that are coming up. And it seems like that's the thing to do now is hand label your bottles.
Well, they have to.
They like to hand them.
If they're little craft guys, they have to.
I don't actually know if this is a little craft guy or not. I started looking it up and then I got distracted by meats.
No, meats.
Is that too heavy a pour?
Straight bourbon whiskey.
That's a pretty heavy pour.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, so we picked this up at, there's a chain of liquor stores there called Bottles and Cases. I think it's kind of like Total Wine and More, or any of those other ones. And we're just looking around for, local whiskeys and, this is one that popped out and it's like, yep, got to have it. It was also my birthday-ish. I got birthday money and I spent it on this.
Nice. This is a birthday bottle.
Birthday bottle.
You see the birthday bottle. Boom, so, put the cork back in.
Oh, so.
Just in case I get.
I thought it was appropriate given that the beer is Buckle Bunny Blonde and we're having Rough Rider Bourbon.
Straight bourbon whiskey, double cask. That's the brandy cask. That's the second cask that's put in there. Straight high rye, non-chilled filtered. What does it say here? Obviously, Teddy Roosevelt. Inspired by native Long Islander Teddy Roosevelt and his legendary Rough Riders, the adventurous group disbanded in the summer of 1898 following the quarantine on Eastern Long Island's Montauk Point.
Montauk.
Distilled from local corn, rye, and malted barley. All right. Well, let's smell it, clink it, put it in our face holes.
Face holes.
Nice sweet taste to it, or it's... smell.
Ooh.
Kind of caramely.
Mm-hmm. It does have a bit of alcohol in the nose. It's not as clean in the beginning in the nose as a lot of them are. Still smells nice, though. It doesn't burn.
No, it's actually really nice. All right, man. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that's good.
That is yummy.
Oh, yeah. Nice and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have the, definitely has the rye. The rye is kind of forward.
Mm-hmm.
The, doesn't have like that cola taste that some ryes have. I wonder if the sherry kind of took that out. Because the Chattanooga rye over there, mm-hmm. which we can definitely try in comparison with it if you want to.
If you feel so inclined.
Always. I like comparing, kind of seeing, because I think when you compare, it helps bring
I've heard that about you. You like to whip it out and
compare. Oh, I do, actually. We can talk about that. Hold on one second.
Are you a cock jockey?
Cock jockey.
And he's off. Except this time he's not peeing. This time he's getting glassware.
Yeah. Let's do a comparison.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So for those of who are just joining us on this podcast, Long Island is the home of my beautiful wife, Helen. And so that's where our road trip started.
I like this Rough Riders.
I hope so. It was $300 a bottle.
It was not. You're a liar.
I am a liar. It was six.
There's no way. I can smell the oak now on the second smell.
Mm-hmm. It does have that rye. Like this is one thing I appreciate about rice is when it has that rye bite that stays.
Yeah.
Like you get all the other flavors and they change over time, but that rye bite that you get on the tip of your tongue and on the sides stays through, but doesn't burn and make my tum tum warm.
My God, tum tum. Hold on, don't take that yet. I want a second taste of the Rough Rider first. So I brought out the Chattanooga whiskey, rye, straight rye malt whiskey. This one, of course, isn't in a brandy case, so it's not going to be a one for one. And plus, it's malted malt whiskey as well. But it'd be kind of good just to taste another rye. I've been really into ryes. One of the ryes that I like right now is the Elijah Craig rye.
That's so do you like rye in beers?
Because
it does a similar thing, but it adds this like grainy.
I don't know if I've had a rye beer.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of fermentable sugar, so they don't use it a lot in beer, but it creates kind of this rough, grainy, not grainy. Grainy's not the right word because you'd associate grainy with like wheat.
Or mouthfeel.
Sort of like this earthy, almost biscuity flavor. I like Ryan, but you have to use just a little bit so it can be overdone, just like in these. But
the second taste was sweeter. So now that my mouth is kind of acclimated to the...
And you're not smelling your sausage fingers?
Yeah. My sausage finger. John, would you like to chew on my sausage finger?
You're so weird. What are you doing?
Just being me, baby. Just being me.
Well, I like this. I enjoy this.
Actually, this is...
That's a good find.
That is a great find. Well, let's try it with the Chattanooga now.
You know what I actually... I think love the most... I mean, not the most, but one of the things I really love when a bourbon is like this, where it's like, I don't like the burn in my throat. Like, I don't mind the sort of burning on my tongue or even on my lips. But when it burns going down past my esophagus, I don't like that. And this doesn't do that.
No, it doesn't. It stays in the mouth. Yeah. It's actually coating my mouth right now. And it's still kind of on the cheeks, on the inside of my cheeks. Feels nice.
I've heard that about you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Whenever it goes down my throat hot, fuck, I can't believe I just said any of that. It reminds me of having like, shut up. It reminds me of having like acid reflux. And that's
yeah,
what
I too.
Related to.
You need some Tums.
Fuck you. All right.
You going to put this one down your throat?
Yeah. Hole? God, when it's hot down my throat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Chattanooga whiskey, straight rye malt whiskey. We're just going to try it as a comparison. It'll be different, but it'll be good. We got this at the Experimental Distillery in Chattanooga.
Does this have the grain bill on it? Did you notice?
No, it didn't. It kind of talked about the process. And when it's put in a sherry cask, it's called a head cask.
What's it called when it's put in a brandy cask?
Same thing. And when they put it in, is that a brandy cask?
Uh-huh.
I think it's the same thing.
I'm just being a shit.
And when they take out staves and you make another barrel with the staves from another cask, that's called a butt cask. Mm.
Do you know there's a company called Restave that does that?
Yeah, a lot of people buy those, yeah. Mm-hmm. The fermentation on this one is a temperated 7 days on the Chattanooga. And one of the things I like about these, I wish more companies did this, like the Rough Rider. It'd be interesting to know like what the grain bill is and how long it was fermented. I kind of like that nerdy stuff.
I do too.
You know, this one is bottled, occasionally captures barrel sediment. I mean, it even tells you that. Its age is greater than 3 years and the batch size was 6 to 10 barrels.
Oh, small batch.
Yep.
Chattanooga.
Small batch. Chattanooga. Anyways, let's go.
Sorry, I forgot to say skull.
Different.
Oh, yeah, that's like...
spicier.
It's like
more a vegetable taste.
Almost like unsweetened chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Bittersweet chocolate.
You get whatever. A little bit of the charcoal, that like sort of dark flavor.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that. But that's about right,
it's
I guess.
It's almost like a bittersweet, like mm-hmm. a bittersweet chocolate.
It's very different.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, that's why I thought it would be kind of fun just to do two different kinds. I don't know. The Rough Rider's smooth. It's not very rough.
Yeah. Oh, the mash bill is 60% corn, 33% winter rye, and 7% barley. I looked it up on the Google machine. I mean, on the DuckDuckGo, which also tracks you.
That's why I've been using Brave. Brave as my browser. Dedicated browser.
It tracks you, too.
No, Brave does not.
Yes, it does.
Does not.
Yes, it does.
No. Prove it.
Well, this is only 90 proof.
Yeah. It's delicious.
I like that. That's it's why very, it's very so good. Drinkable.
Mm-hmm. Good find.
Yeah, that was lucky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, every now and then. Mm-hmm. Because this definitely is not at Total Wine & More, because I was there this week.
This was one where you looked at the price and you're like, it's either really good or they're upcharging for the craft.
Well, what was it? What was it in Long Island?
It was in the 70s, $75, something like that. Yeah. I think it was 77.
So you're kind of around like an Eagle Rare price or something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's not crazy priced, but it's not the typical $40-ish.
No, you and I kind of stay around the 40, like 30
to $40,
stuff.
$50. Yeah, it's like a $50 bottle is like, that's a nice one that I hide from Gary.
Except we tasted that Yippee-ki-yay on Guy's weekend, and that was a $350 bottle of High West Yippee-ki-yay.
I'm going to refill it and sell it.
No.
I'm just kidding. I'm just going to stash it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
I'm glad you took the bottle because the label is awesome.
Oh, it's
and it was
really
just
cool.
A little bit. So
yeah,
for our listeners, just left. So you know, we did a lost episode. I don't think it's very good to publish. We might throw it out there 1 week and just be like, you're welcome. It's trash. Enjoy. and we tasted the Yippee-ki-yay from High West, and it was not very good. It was not good. It was not what
it wasn't good.
I've had lots of High West before. I've had their bourbon, their rye, their double rye, their rendezvous rye, which was actually one of my favorites. This one was not awesome.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't even just not like, I feel like there's a difference between bad and not good. Like not good is like, well, I'll still drink it, but I'm never going to order this again.
No, I didn't think it was bad.
That's what it was. It wasn't bad, bad. It just was like,
it wasn't undrinkable. Like, no. I can't drink this. It was just kind of like, this is not what I expected. Mm-hmm. And I had like what was finished in like a vermouth cask, I think is what it said. It had some weird, it was like some funky thing. Mm-hmm. Anyways, $350 bottle online.
But is that it because could be it was rare and that's the resell? Like,
well, I have to tell you, sell. A lot of bourbons and stuff are overly priced because of popularity. And I listen to a lot of bourbon podcasts and they talk about this all the time. And then you get, I'm on like bourbon forums or groups on Facebook and stuff like that for our podcast. Nerd. And so I want to hear what other people are saying. Oh, and most of it is that they hunt for rare bourbons and liquor stores. And they try to make friends with people in liquor stores and stuff. And it's really big in the South, like Kentucky, Tennessee, and stuff like that. It's not so much popular here in that same sense.
Idaho has a problem with it.
Yes, yeah, so you told me that, yeah.
Yeah, because that they're a state-run liquor store state. And
they put out the list.
They put out a list of what's coming in, and people will camp out to get it and will be very aggressive to get it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, to me, that's unfortunate.
It is.
But whatever.
So they're trying to change the laws.
So what I like to do when I'm looking for whiskeys and stuff is I watch reviews, especially reviews of, you know, from people that I trust. So like Whiskey Tribe, I love those guys at Whiskey Tribe. And they'll do reviews and stuff. And then I'll watch a couple other YouTube channels where they kind of say, well, you need to find this or this is, these are low price, but crowd pleasing ones. And you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to find a whiskey that you really, really like Wild Turkey 101 is one of my favorites. Cheap, $19 a bottle. And then with Washington sales tax, it's like $80. So it's a discount.
That's it. So let's take a trip to California. What about, you know, California has cheap liquor tax.
Do they? So does Oregon, don't
they? But you have to pay for gas when you get there, so it's a bit of a wash.
It would end up being a bit of a wash. But Oregon, there's no sales tax.
There is now.
Oh, there is?
On alcohol, yeah.
Oh, really?
They actually now have the second highest liquor tax in the
country.
Fucking
liberal cities.
They just
states.
Good Do you know Lord. Why? So Helen looked into it when we were looking at, like, we were in Tulsa, and we're like, should we buy alcohol here?
Yeah.
because we're going back home, we know alcohol tax in Washington is high. Washington tax is like $34 a gallon.
Yikes.
This is how they tax alcohol, is by the gallon. In Oklahoma, it's like $4 per gallon. So it's next to nothing compared to other places. Oregon used to be low, and they just bumped theirs to like $28 a gallon because they have a problem with underage drinking, and they're trying to do things to keep kids from drinking.
The same thing they did with cigarettes.
Now, the fucked up part is that that doesn't, large distilleries aren't included in that tax. So there are some exceptions that apply only to like Jack Daniels.
Oh, which, just craft distilleries or
craft distilleries. Mm. It's like all the craft distilleries is like, do you think some little 17-year-old little shit's going to Crater Lake Distilling and buying a $40 bottle of vodka?
Nope.
No, they're buying bum rum. Beam, they're looking for like
Southern Comfort
handles. They want as cheap as possible because they're trying
ancient
to get
age.
Yeah. So you're not
Kessler.
You're not solving anything. You're just making it hard for craft distillers to create and sell their product.
Yep.
And you're benefiting only companies that are not from Oregon.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. You're like stifling your economy to help somebody in Kentucky.
It's not supposed to make sense.
It's dumb.
It's not supposed to.
It's fucking dumb.
Because the people who write the laws are dumb.
They are dumb.
They are dumb.
Well, they make these fucked up logic steps because somebody, some asshole was like, you know what? Here's the logic that I made up that doesn't actually make sense. And then they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. We'll make a law. And that's a thing. Like, no, they clearly didn't think. You know who wrote that law?
Sometimes educated to stupidity.
You know who wrote that law? Some dumb fuck who Jim Beam was probably somebody from Jim Beam was like, you know, you should write a law that taxes the craft distillers because they're contributing to minor intoxication. But don't include us because we only sell alcohol responsibly.
Yeah.
I'm sure
we're from a dry county.
Yeah. How could it be us?
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure it was some stupid shit like that.
Probably was.
Everybody bit and said, oh yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to drive my parents home and not make love to my wife.
So it was interesting because on No Agenda, I think it was this week. I think it was a Sunday show. They talked about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Do you ever remember him?
Mm-mm.
So he was a Lutheran pastor in Germany during the Nazi occupation.
Oh, yeah.
And he took a trip to America before the Nazis took over in Germany. And he saw the inequality between blacks and whites in this country. And as a Christian, he thought this is terrible because we shouldn't be pitting each other by race at all. We're all God's children. And then when he came back to Germany, he started seeing the same thing with the Jews. And he started speaking out against it. Well, he spoke out against it so much, and the Lutheran Church turned in Germany to support Nazism because, you know, big bad guy. And he continued to speak out against it, which put him into a Nazi camp. And he wrote letters from the prison in there. Eventually, he was executed, I think within a short time frame before the war ended. So if he just would have hung on there a little longer, he would have made it, but they hung him. And one of the... Yeah,
I don't think he had a lot of say.
Yeah, I know. He didn't have a lot of say.
Just hang on, buddy.
Just hang on, buddy.
That's actually probably the exact wrong thing. Just hang on. Hang in there. You'll be all right.
I am hanging in there. Yeah, that's terrible.
That is terrible.
I can't believe you said that.
And, I can't believe you said it.
That John guy at hotmail.com.
Hotmail.
So...
with A-U-G.
But they talked about one of the letters where he kind of described the people who go along with it aren't evil themselves. They're actually stupid.
Mm.
And the people who are running the things, they might be evil, but the people who go along with it are stupid. And they virtue signal. He didn't use these words, but he kind of said the same thing. They virtue signal. They want to be on the right side. They want to be all this. So they kind of lose their minds over it and become emotional, which is a human thing to do. And this kind of leads into, I know, a topic that you and I want to go into tonight, especially with Christianity and politics.
Yep. We're going to have to keep it short, though, because we're 40 minutes in.
Are we really now?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
But that's okay.
Yeah. So anyways, I thought that was an interesting take. Because oftentimes I think that the people are being evil. And I don't really think about the side where, even if they're highly educated in the sense that they went to school and stuff like that, it doesn't mean that the school was actually teaching them anything virtuous or critical thinking. They could have just been activating them, mm-hmm. as in some activist kind of thinking. And it happens on both sides. So this is the lead in.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's to that point, like,
so the article that you read this week was,
well, just before that, like, one of my really good friends, we joke about, because he's like one of the smartest dumb people I've ever met. He's very intelligent and has like no common sense. And you could see how one data point that is honestly irrelevant, such as price per bottle, mm-hmm. completely influences the opinion. And that's kind of what these people are doing. Like, there's degrees of dumbness, and some people just are just ignorant, like hadn't really thought it through, or just looking for something to grab onto.
Sure.
And to your point, it doesn't make them evil. It just makes them not willing to do the work to think it through.
Or stupid.
Like, I just want something to get behind.
Sure.
I want somebody to tell me what to do. I'll just do that.
Or my team, or mm-hmm. it's a team-based yeah. thing, right?
Yep. Well, and so that's what leads in. So the other day, I came across an article that I thought was really interesting that I sent to Wes. Do you have it pulled up?
I do. It's called The Evangelical Church Faces a State of Emergency Over the Pandemic and Politics, Andy Stanley says.
So the title is a little clickbaitish because it creates this like sense of crazy. But I clicked it because I find this kind of stuff fascinating, especially when somebody within the church is speaking out against something they think the church, quote unquote, the church as a whole is not doing well.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, it's like his take on all it. And we kind of brushed on it a little bit, but tried to save it for the podcast, yep. of course. But it's really interesting because his take on it is not, his critical issue is less about, like, so many pastors will come out and say, the church is suffering for whatever reason. We're missing kids. We're making decisions, and the devil is doing these terrible things. His take is like, no, we're losing people because we've created this tribal division within the church.
Yep.
You know, and he even goes as far as to say, like, there are Christians that are Democrats and Christians that are Republicans that hate each other.
They'll go to the Democrat church mm-hmm. or the Republican church,
which makes no sense. And that's his point. It's like one of his best statements. And there was something to the effect of, the minute that we start using religion to divide us, that's the moment that we've lost.
Well, it's not Christianity anymore.
It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really appreciate it. So when I read it, I thought immediately of you, cause we've kind of talked about this before. You know, and he has some really good statements that I really appreciated. And now I love these conversations because we come to this conversation from different views and different beliefs. But I think we both agree on the merits of what he's saying.
Sure. Well, I've talked to many Christians like after Trump lost the election, you know, they're like, well, it's. You know, it's kind of prophesized that Trump's going to use our guy and stuff like that. I've heard that.
Prophesied by who?
It doesn't matter.
Just some person.
Sure. But
like, believing in a not.
Right.
They're believing in not God.
Yeah. It's
exactly, some guy
I know.
Who claims to.
Yeah. And it's politicized. And whether you like him or not, Ravi Zacharias was a Christian apologist. Some shady stuff had come out about him after he passed away, of course. But regardless of that, it doesn't mean that the things that he said wasn't true. And as a matter of fact, he was a sounding alarm for decades before what we're living in right now, which is a very postmodern world. He was warning people about postmodernism, which is what we're in now. We're actually in exactly what he said we were going to be in. And he said that whenever politics is, or whenever religion is politicized, it leads to tyranny. Mm-hmm. And I was right there with him. There's no room for politics in Christianity, as far as I'm concerned. And this is the same mistake that the Jews made with Jesus, is that some thought not that he was the Messiah or the Son of God, but he was the one that was going to come and liberate them from the Romans. So they were looking for a political leader too, which is why they were very disappointed when he was not a political leader. And Jesus spoke a lot about the kingdom of heaven and not the kingdom of a man. And when he talked about taxes, he talked about give unto Caesar as what Caesar and what God's is what God's. He cared more about people and souls than he cared about any of the worldly things that we attach or associate ourselves with and our ideologies that go along with that. I like Andy Stanley. I don't think he's as articulated as his dad, Charles Stanley, whom I listen to quite a bit. And Charles Stanley is an old Southern Baptist preacher, but he's not in the way in which you think. Like, even when I say Southern Baptist, I think like a really fat old white guy that pounds pulpits
and fire and brimstone. And
but he's not. He grew up in a, you know, single mom home and stuff. He's a very compassionate man, very loving, loves Jesus, tells it like it is. Hell is real. Jesus is real. Jesus loves you. Really focuses on those things, but he doesn't shy away from the stuff that's hard for people to swallow either. But he does it in a compassionate way. And I think this is the moment in which I think several things. I have lots of thoughts that go through my head. I think Christians in particular, especially in America, because we're seen as a quote unquote Christian nation, I think we're activated on purpose to be politicized in certain ways and to go along with certain things because it fits us. I think people who look at Christians and they associate us with conservativeness and Republicans and stuff like that, I think that's a propaganda. I think Christians eat it. I think non-Christians eat it and they believe it. And I think what we have in Christendom, and we've always had this in Christendom, is people who have never read the Bible, nor do they understand hermeneutics, which is the art and science of interpreting the Bible. And so we have a lot of ignorant Christians. And rather than open up the Bible and read it and understand it and learn it for yourself, you've have a man that stands in front of you once a week and tells you what it says. And it's always been this way with Christianity. It always has been. It's a human thing to not do the research yourself and just have someone tell you. And we do it all the time, even now with like clickbait stuff and Twitter and whatnot.
Well, yeah, reading the news is that way.
And we don't engage our brains to think about it. Instead, we give emotional reactions. So I think a lot of what he's describing in this article is an emotional reaction to certain things. So if he says, listen, guys, Trump didn't win the election, and then people are like, well, you must be from Satan. And they get really, that's all emotion. There's no critical thinking in it whatsoever. There's no compassion. There's no understanding. There's no, you know, forgiveness or redemption or repentance.
There's no thought through any of it.
No.
And it, like, if you were to think about the things that Christians like to say Christianity is about.
Yeah.
Which are things like love and acceptance and
love, being, faith, and hope, and the
being
the
non-judgmental.
Biggest of these is love.
You know, it's like the person is like, "Well, you're from Satan and you're going to hell." It's like that is you are judging that person, and the Bible explicitly states, "You shall not judge."
Yeah,
right. So,
I mean, there's a different. I mean, when we get into hell topic, I mean, there's ways that you can say it. I mean, in Christianity, Christians believe. Followers of Christ believe that Jesus said that there's a literal hell. So there's a literal hell. He said, if you don't believe in me, that's the place that you go. He didn't say in a mean way. He's just saying, listen, this is just, these are options, but you have freedom. You can choose those things. It's fine. It's not a judgment. I mean, you're
not from him, but from these other people who are judging his statement.
And some people don't know how to express that well. Or they hear from the again, it's from the pulpit. The pulpit is such an important place. It's the same place that the president stands in front of a pulpit and he preaches whatever the religion of the government is about, what the government's going through and what you need to believe for the government, whether they're gaslighting you or not. They're preaching. Every movie that you watch, every book that you read, it's something being preached to you that they're trying to sell you as a story. They are. And we love it because as humans, we like stories.
So what's the motive behind it for some of these people to act this way?
Oh, well, I think they're stupid.
That's it?
They're stupid. They really don't understand the Bible. They don't understand what Jesus was here for. If they really understood anything about what Jesus was preaching, they would look past a person's politics. They would look past their sexuality. They would look past their beliefs in any other place, and they would try to love the person as they are where they're at. And they can disagree in all of those levels with them personally. But as a Christian, you are to love that person regardless. I mean, and this is why I think most Christians are ignorant of the Bible, is because, like, if you take a person like David, David broke all 10 commandments. He slept with another man's wife. He had him killed so he could sleep with her.
How many of the 10 commandments have you broken?
All of them.
You've murdered someone?
Well, hate in your heart is murder.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's...
I guess by that definition, sure.
Yeah, and Jesus was always looking at the heart. He wasn't necessarily looking at the visible thing
that you did. It's about intent, right?
Right, like, it's your conscience.
People fuck up.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole idea of forgiveness, right?
Yeah.
People fuck up.
Yeah.
They sometimes make bad choices.
Yeah.
But understand it, accept it, own it.
Yeah.
Ask for forgiveness.
Humble.
Move on.
The meek shall inherit the earth. Mm-hmm. And Christians aren't meek. They're just not in general. They're brash and they're forceful. And I think there might be times and places for that, but I don't think not in the context that this is right now.
You know what I think is interesting? Like, as you say that, I think about the Christians that I know, and most Christians that I know are actually very wonderful. And so I wonder how much of it is like one-on-one. I think a lot of Christians are fantastic and we would get along. But then you put them in a group where they need to make a statement or become a troll of some sort, sure. And then they become awful.
They might.
Do you reconcile those two? Like, I don't think the Christians that I know that are like, I talk about you and Dana and our friends Tim and Amy across the street are like Helen and I are not religious at all. But like, if there were Christians that we want to know, they're you guys. Because you're loving and forgiving and honest and I mean, honestly, you accept us for who we are. We accept you for who you are. There's no judgment there. We just know you're great people. And that's all that really matters. I feel like so many people fall into that category. And then there's that one stupid thing that they've decided they should be triggered on that causes them to go off the deep end.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's told them they should be militant about this topic. And so they've just decided that's the way it's going to be without thinking it through.
So humans in a group are dumb. Humans on one-on-one might be more smarter than that.
So how do we get back to that?
Well, that's
how do we do what this pastor wants to do?
Well, that's lack of Bible ignorance. So what a pastor's responsibility is not to tell the flock what to think. Mm-hmm. A pastor's responsibility, much like a father, is to teach the children how to think and then help them draw those conclusions, critically think those things through, and to own it for themselves so that I don't have to tell you what to think. You have already found the truth and you know what to think.
Yeah.
And that way, what happens is that if you're in a group situation as a Christian, you're thinking for yourself, well, I believe the same things as them, but I'm not going to go along with them on this in that they're riled up, they're angry, they're whatever. Mm-hmm. Christians that think that they can take over the world and make a change that's positive for God, they want to do it on their own strength when the Bible clearly states it's in God's strength. And they might say it in Jesus' name. Lots of great examples of this. And this is why hermeneutics is so important. Is there was an MMA fighter once that said he can do all things through Christ who strengthens him. And that was like his motto for, you know, making this guy's other face look like meatloaf in the ring. I don't think that's what Jesus meant. That Jesus was going to give him Hulk strength in order to make this guy's face look like meatloaf in a little bit and give him big cauliflower ears. Right? What he meant was that there's going to be hard times and that through his spirit, you're going to be able to walk through those hard times.
You can handle it.
You know, and actually that's something I think the lack of preaching those things in this day and age causes all of these snowflakes that we see that they crumble at the moment something bad happens in their life. Mm-hmm. They just
a little bit of adversity and the world's
done.
It always kills me when people pray to win in sports.
Yeah.
Cause it's like do you really think that Jesus and God are on your side in this?
I guarantee you God doesn't give a
does not
dang about football, soccer. He does not care.
And so, like,
He cares about every person on that field, but he doesn't care who wins.
And if you're playing football and you got 60 kids on one side and 60 kids on the other, guaranteed there's somebody on both sides that's praying to win.
Yeah.
So why would God pick a side because this guy, but not this guy?
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make any sense at all. I find it just irrational. It's illogical. Like if you assume all the things about Christianity are true, this decision doesn't make any sense. Pray for safety, play for a good match, pray that I do my best.
Pray that no one gets hurt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But like praying that I win tonight.
Yep.
Like that to me is you turned the corner from being a Christian to being greedy.
Yeah. Because you're not asking for anybody else.
You want something for you. Yeah. You're not asking something that's good. You're not asking for the best outcome. You're asking for the best outcome for you.
So you're talking about ignorant and immature Christians.
Yeah.
They don't know.
No, well, they don't think it through. Well, that's what I hate.
But they've heard that. It's come from a pulpit somewhere.
Yeah. Will yourself into winning.
Yes. You know, it's like the prosperity gospel.
Pray your way to gold.
Pray that your wallet will be full. Wallet, you're going to be full, you know, and then you ask God to give you a full wallet. For what end? Because what God cares about most is people. He says it all. It's all throughout the Bible. It's about people.
Yeah.
And it's about him. The only side God's on is God.
Mm-hmm.
So he's asking you to come along his side. But if you ask him to be on your side, you've already lost. Oh, you're done.
So one of my favorite quotes from this article, bringing it kind of back to it, was when he says, the moment our love for or concern for country takes precedence over our love for people in the country, we're off mission. When saving America diverts energy, focus, and reputation away from saving Americans, we no longer qualify as ecclesia. Mm-hmm. Which means church. We're merely political tools, a manipulated voting demographic, a photo op. We give up the moral and ethical high ground.
Sure. And we look stupid doing it too.
I love that because I love that part where he's like the minute we're trying to save America and not Americans, you take the focus away from people and onto this earthly system that's been put in place.
So, you know,
that's when you've lost.
Yeah. You know, when propaganda is being activated, when your quote unquote enemy is labeled in such a way where you no longer see a human being, you mm-hmm. see a person who deserves to die or be rejected.
Yeah. And recent, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene said that gay people should be arrested, put in prison. No, it wasn't. I mean, she might have said it because she's crazy. But there's a Texas pastor who's like, they should be prosecuted, lined up, and shot.
Yeah,
like
disgusting.
How are you claiming to be a Christian that follows Christ and the Bible, saying that somebody who does something that you believe is immoral should be murdered?
Yeah,
like how do you reconcile it? I get you disagree with what they're doing. And you have a right to disagree with what they're doing.
Yep.
But the moment that you're calling for violence and murder against somebody that you disagree with, you have lost all credibility as a Christian.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
No, but it speaks to a really ignorant base.
It does. They want to get fired up and want to looking for somebody to fight. Why are you looking for somebody to fight? Why don't you look for somebody to hug?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting what we focus on too. Homosexuality is explicitly, especially by the Apostle Paul, not necessarily forbidden, but it was a hallmark of worldliness and not godliness. And in the Old Testament, they were stoned as an example of, and it's funny because it's not necessarily homosexuality, it's over-sexuality, because homosexuality actually wasn't a thing in the sense of homosexuality. They would fuck everything. They would have sex with everything. Because in the terms of the Old Testament, they were trying to create a tribe for God in which that would not be what we want to be known as with God, tribalism. But outside of that, even though it's considered a part of worldliness, there's nowhere in the Bible in which Jesus says, and we must put them to death. No. And as a matter of fact, if there's any judgment, it doesn't come from us. It comes from God. And so my job as a Christian is to, or any Christian listening to this, your job as a Christian is to look beyond the sexuality. I know they make it their identity. And lots of people make their identity a thing that's not the thing. Mm-hmm. You need to look at the human being behind it. If you can be loving and winsome towards them, you want them to see Christ. You don't want them to see you and a good person. I don't want you to see me and say, Wes is a good person. I want you to see Christ and be like, well, that's a good representation of Christ.
Well, and you're supposed to be Christ-like.
Yeah.
And so if Christ was here and he walked up on the gay pride parade, would he like preach fire and brimstone and murder and kill everyone and blow everybody up?
No.
No.
He'd probably, well, so the difference between that two is that he knows them. God's very good at knowing us, as far as I'm concerned. And so he knows them and he knows the compassion that a lot of people are looking for and the love that they're looking for. Which is why the men that are going to be self-righteous and throw the stones at the prostitute and Jesus comes and says, hey, any of you guys that are, you know, pure, I mean, by all means, stone the lady, right? And they all drop their stones. And then he goes to her and he says, now go and sin no more. Who's here? Who's left here to judge you? Anyone here left to judge you? Mm-hmm. She goes, well, no one. And he goes, and I don't judge you either. Now go and sin no more. And he spoke to her heart in that moment and showed her, you know, all these guys and show them you're all just as guilty. Like, how do you know that she slept with everyone else? Like, how do you know that? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's more to the story when we read it.
Well, in the Old Testament talks about that a lot too. Like a woman can be stoned because she was accused of cheating on her husband, of infidelity. She didn't even have to do it. Mm-hmm. Just the guy would be like, yep, that's her.
Yep.
And maybe he was just tired of her.
Easy divorce.
Or she was a yeller.
Sure.
Bad cook. Who knows?
Yeah.
No, she fucks around.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I guess the point of bringing that up is like, we talk about this a lot, like read between the lines and understand the intent and the meaning. And some things in the Bible are just things. It's not 100%. This is how it is. It's written at a specific time with specific cultural influences.
And that's hermeneutics.
Yeah. That's hermeneutics. So it, like, you can't take everything literally all the time.
No.
But understand the tenets and the intent of what was written.
Yeah.
And it's not to hate and divide and pick a team and fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
It's acceptance and love and lead by example. Yeah. And, you know, who am I to say, like, make the world a better place? Like, it's not that big a difference between Christianity and, like, things Bob Marley wanted, right? Like, just love each. I mean, Bob Marley smoked a lot of weed, but you know, they had similar hairstyles. They probably had similar complexions.
Maybe.
I don't know. And that's when we got canceled.
Yeah. Well, so if you're confused about hermeneutics, I said it's art and science of interpreting the Bible. Really, if you want to take hermeneutics, there's a principle in every scripture. So understanding the context in which it was written, understanding the context in which we're understanding it in our day and age, there's a principle in there that we can apply that crosses all the ages. Doesn't necessarily make it literal as to what's going on in their age to our age. Like, we would call most men in Jerusalem in early AD pedophiles because they're 20-year-old men that are marrying 13-year-olds. It was cultural. It wasn't sexual so much as it was cultural. So we would have a big problem with that in our day and age. So we don't take that part and say, oh, well, they're all pedophiles. What we do is we try to understand what principle was in there as far as there's not a lot going on for these women. Here are men that are established and they have jobs. They take care of those women. They become their wives, better or worse. That's the idea. But they take care of them. It's not sexual other than they believe in procreating because they want children. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to F around. Some might, but really, the Jewish religion was more about procreating, the commandment of go and fill the earth. So that's the principle that we have to understand. And the Bible, when it uses certain kind of visual terminology and stuff like that, you have to read it and critically think about what's the principle that's being taught. Mm-hmm. And Jesus' mission was to come down to show people who God is in human form. God is compassionate enough to make himself one of us, to understand us and to love us. And that instead of just saying, well, it's just spirit in the sky, here is an actual physical manifestation of God, and that we can hug him and touch him and love him. And he hugs us. And I mean, one of the to me, one of the greatest things would be to die. And on the other side is just a hug from Jesus would sound wonderful on the other side. Not, you know, like you did all the right things. You voted for all the right people, son. You know, you said all the right thing.
Yeah. He's definitely not a high fiver.
No, but a hugger. He's definitely a hugger.
Yeah.
He's definitely.
Hopefully he doesn't make it weird. Like, you know, the too long of a hug. No.
Well,
like,
there's
Jesus.
I don't want the pat and I don't want the rub. I just want a nice, I don't even
the
care
rub,
if it's a long
like in the
hug.
Middle, like in the lower back, right above your butt crack.
If you were able to, and this might get a little touchy. If you were able to hug your dad one more time, would it be long?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's how I imagine.
I wouldn't let go.
Hugging Jesus would be. For me. And so when I hug my dad, I hug my dad the same way. I squeeze him tight.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Do you think about like, I'm a hugger. You know, I'm a hugger. Yeah. You're a hugger.
I love that you're a hugger.
I squeeze.
Yeah.
When
I'm annoyed, I pat.
Yeah. Like, so like I hug most people, but I don't hug people I don't want to hug.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. Right?
Like, and when I hug.
Yeah.
Like it's a squeeze.
It's a love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like our friend Gary's brought it up. He's like, oh, John's the best hugger. Sorry, Helen, you're a good hugger too, but John's the best hugger. But it's because there's intent. I think with Gary, it's a little different because it's a man hug.
Yeah.
And men are awkward. Yeah. And
until they're not.
And I just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to hug you. You're a person and I love you.
Yeah.
Let me give you a squeeze and make sure you know that I love you.
Yeah.
Like it's that
it's intentional.
Yeah, it is. It's intentional. And speaking of hugging, early on in the pandemic, when we were all living at home and Tate never left the house, we never left the house. There was one day where it clicked in my brain, like Tate's struggling. And I've realized that I haven't touched him in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Physical touch is a very human thing.
Yeah. And so I told Helen one day, I was like, we need to be more intentional about hugging and touching, even if it's just like putting her hand on his shoulder or patting him on the back. Like we need to be more intentional at it. It's easy to forget.
Yep.
Especially as a hugger, like usually those hugs are like hellos and goodbyes and maybe sometimes arms around. If there's never a hello and goodbye, that like trigger to do it, we need to make sure we remember to do it because it's important. People need it. People like it. Enjoy it. I know Tate does. He'll never say it, but he does.
Well, I know when Dana has a bad day, because we've talked on the phone throughout the day, when she comes home, I'll hold her. And at first she's really rigid. And then I heard somewhere it's like 20 seconds. If you hold a person for 20 seconds, like their nervous system and all the endorphins and stuff
allow the endorphins them to like
release.
Start clicking in.
And... Yeah. And it's just by that touch. And this is why I also remember there was a documentary years ago that I think it was on 60 Minutes. And they visited an orphanage in Ukraine right outside Chernobyl. And it was people who gave up their children because their children were mutated because of the toxic, because of Chernobyl, and they don't get touched. They sit in this orphanage and they're like 4 or 5 years old and they haven't been touched in years. And the reporter came in there and picked up one of the kids and held it. And the kid instantly started crying and shaking because it never received human touch. And it was almost cruel, but in their mind, these were just throwaway kids. Why are we even keeping them alive? So the people in the place...
It's very utilitarian.
Yes, they are. Well, communism is very utilitarian. Yeah. And having this American reporter there doing this thing and holding this kid, and I was weeping when I watched this. And I don't cry very often. I'm actually getting teary right now. Because what a human thing to have your nervous system all of a sudden feel the touch of another human being who's intently loving you. And Christians need to remember that. And when you look at somebody that you feel inside of you, you might be vehemently opposed to, you're also looking at a person that needs the love of God, in my opinion, and are not receiving that. They're receiving something else, and it might be toxic. And even it might even be called love. We know lots of love in this world that is a toxic love. And to share the love of God to me is something that is not toxic. It's pure. It's better than. It's a higher love. It's an intimacy that's more than the intimacy that I think that we can comprehend. That's not preached in the pulpit.
But how do you? So you say like you see somebody that needs the love of God. But a lot of these people who are being dickheads to other people believe those people believe the same thing, but they believe it in a different way. So how do you have that conversation with that person that's like, that person needs the love of God, also I'd like to murder them because they're not doing my thing or they're not on my team, right? Like you are a wonderful human being where you see humans as humans regardless of all the other things outside of them. But there are Christians who say that person needs the love of Christ and fuck them. Like, I don't, like, that's the part that I don't understand. How can you think that and then act a completely different way? And then how do you connect with those Christians to get them to start critically thinking about the way they're viewing their quote unquote opponent?
Well, they're Christians, and I mean, it's biblical. Like, hey, you believe this textbook too, right? You believe what's in this textbook's true? Well, it says that if they are walking around blindly, stumbling around, why would you put your foot out when you know where the light switch is? It's kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. They need the love of God, but I'm going to put my foot out. Yeah. So they stumble more. How does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's why don't you turn on the light and say, hey, here's the way out. You know, and they can still walk around and close their eyes and stumble around if they want to. That's their choice. But why don't you provide the light?
So what do you do when there's contradictory statements in the Bible, the Old Testament, New Testament? You know, it's like the Old Testament is very violent, and a lot of it was punishment for doing shitty things. And the New Testament is a lot of love and acceptance. So how do you reconcile those two when somebody says, well, you know, this passage from the Old Testament says I should burn down your house, and this passage from the New Testament says I should love you and show you the way?
Well, it was always about the way, about showing them to God. But in the Old Testament, it was as God was building a people that were supposed to be his chosen people, that show them who God is and his love. They made tons of mistakes. Mm-hmm. They didn't always obey him. Mm-hmm. God had judgment upon people, in which he used the Israelites to bring judgment upon them here on earth. Instead of him bringing judgment, he used them as judgment as they were in that time. I think people forget that as well, is that God deals with us in the time and the epoch in which we live in, the age in which we live in. They're not advanced people. They don't know as much as we know now, but they understood violence and war and punishment and judgment in a different way in which we understand it in our modern world. So God uses that in that sense at that time. We look back at it and say, that's very archaic. That's very violent. But they understood it not in that same way. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a contextual thing. It doesn't mean that they always followed God all the way through. It doesn't mean that they did everything that he said. And that's one of the things that I appreciated about the Bible, is that there's lots of people who God said, go do this, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And then God had judgment on them. Well, isn't that God's chosen people? God's having judgment upon them. Yes, because they also disobeyed God. In some cases, we read it in a way that we think it's chronological, but it's not necessarily, in which the Amorites had 300 years to repent, and then God was like, all right, time's up.
What about the Nephites? What'd they do?
I don't know the Nephites.
Yeah, it's because it's in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah. Okay. So I passed the test.
You did pass the test. Nicely done.
So we have to understand it in their context. That's always hard to do. There was a teacher I worked with at one of the Christian schools, and they always called like Christopher Columbus. Today we'd be like, well, fuck him. But he was a man of his time, and people hated when she said that. He was a man of his time, because it seemed like it was whitewashing the horrible atrocities that Christopher Columbus, that we now know he did. Mm-hmm. But he really was a man of his time. In that time,
he wasn't unique in the shitty things that he did.
No, but he was also doing what they thought considered was morally right. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I mean, sure, God judged him for those things, but at that time, and history is a weird thing too, because the people who win the things write history, not the people who lose the things, right? So even that can be a bit skewed. Mm-hmm. And so, he really was a man of his time. So when I read the Bible too, I'm reading people of their time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for me to get in my head about it, because I don't live in that time. And it's really easy for me to judge them because it's so far away and I don't live in that time. I'm very modern, right? So, and yet we can see all of the same things. Like when I read the Old Testament, I'm like, we do the same shit still today.
Well, it's almost like focus on the intent and not the minutia.
Yeah.
Like what is the overarching...
Well, again, it's the theme, principle.
The principle that principle. You're supposed to learn from
yes.
that.
Yeah.
So, and I think people don't do that. They take tiny tidbits and they use it to condemn and talk shitty and justify their bad actions.
Yeah.
Even though it's like out of context or out of cultural context, out of the timeline context, like they're just not thinking through it critically and actually understanding what the point of it was. Like maybe the point is being obedient and following these guidelines, not go murder a bunch of people because there's a story about murder in the Bible.
The hallmark of a Christian is a person who's not trying to be good. They're just trying to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference.
There is.
They're not trying to always do the right thing. They're just trying to admit when they don't do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, knowing that they're not always going to do the right thing, even though they're trying to.
That's the heart God is looking for. He's looking for that contrite heart. He's looking for the humble person.
Yep.
And as Christians, we need to be humble, which means we don't consider people better than us. And we don't consider ourselves better than them. Mm-hmm. And Jesus came to serve, not to be served. And if he's the person that we're supposed to be like, then we serve others, even when they shit on us, even when they call us names, even when they throw things at us, even when they call us all kinds of crazy stuff or hate us, we're supposed to love and pray for them regardless of that. That is the winsome thing. And so when I say things like the meek will inherit the earth, just continue being meek, being humble. You know, when it comes to the woke stuff that we go through or the postmodern stuff, it's all being about being humble. That was a humbling moment.
It was
right there.
It was.
You went to pour the beer.
I did. I just completely missed.
That was awesome.
Well, Wes, I think that's a great way. Like we're kind of up against time. I think that's a great way to finish. I think that's a great statement you just made. And I appreciate you. We've managed to talk about the two of the three things that we don't talk about.
Yep.
Politics, religion, and Fight Club.
Yeah. Fight Club.
So
shut up about Fight Club.
Quite,
John, I want to thank you for bringing the Rough Rider tonight. That was
delicious. Good.
I will be having another glass before we go here.
Yes, sir.
And the beer from Elkins Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. Listen, if you're in Santa Fe, if you're in Grant, New Mexico, but off Santa Fe Avenue, you need to go to Elkins Brewing Company.
West of Albuquerque.
And listen, if you're in Long Island, I suggest you go pick up a bottle of Rough Rider. Actually, if you're probably on the East Coast,
you could probably get it.
You could probably get it on the West Coast. We suck. And and we don't get the same things. Like a lot of Kentucky, Tennessee bourbons we don't get because it's exclusive to that region.
Mm-hmm.
Although I heard today that Nelson's Briar, which I have, which is the old Bell Mead, they just started nationwide distribution of their Nelson's Briar. So you're gonna probably see that in Total Wine. If you haven't gotten Bell Mead, there is Bell Mead and Bell Mead Reserve at Total Wine and More in Tukwila, Washington. Mm-hmm. Where I work near. So go check that out. And John, thank you for bringing up this topic. This is something that I'm obviously passionate about. And I've taught middle school kids, high school kids, and they have all of these questions. And my classroom was always asked the most insane question.
All of them.
If I don't know, I'll say I don't know. And then what we'll do is we'll go discover it together.
Yep.
And that's the best part is the discovery.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyways.
Next week.
Yes.
We will be discovering
Ooh.
Things from St. Louis.
Oh, yay. Are you going to bring both the beer and the bourbon?
Actually, let me check that. I'm going to check that.
Okay.
We're going to go Lexington, Kentucky first.
Yes.
We're going to go Lexington.
Which is bourbon.
Which is bourbon. Yay! There is a bourbon district in Lexington, Lexington, Kentucky that is awesome. And we will check that out next time.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
And the beer is going to be from St. Louis?
Yes, I think so.
Do you want a little
St. Louis,
which
Missouri?
One do you want Chattanooga?
No, the beer will be from Lexington too.
Really?
I'm pretty sure we bought some.
Do you want Chattanooga or Rough Rider?
Rough Rider.
Okay. We'll do our last cheers here.
Put it in my mouth hole.
We got to come up with a commercial, by the way, so other podcasters can.
Would you like to learn how to coat the back of your throat? Listen in. Wes can tell you how.
Wes can tell you. I can tell you how. It's hot when it goes down my throat.
Wow. Well, fuck. Cheers, buddy.
Hey, may your glass always be full and your pants always tight.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.